We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello there, friends, and welcome once again to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I know it's been a hot minute since I've put one of these out, but it is because I was just away in Edinburgh doing the Edinburgh Fringe with my show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. I gotta say, I had a fantastic time. I really enjoyed it. I was very unsure how it was gonna go, how many people were gonna turn out. But, guys, you did well. You showed up. There was numbers. There was people every night. I had an excellent time. And I'm definitely going to go back. So thank you so much for those of you who turned out and or turned people towards the show if you couldn't make it yourselves. I really appreciate your help and support. As I've said, that's the best way to support this show. It's the best way to keep this free and able to be done, is for me to be able to keep creating and keep doing shows. So if you would like more of that, then I'm trying my best to organize a little bit of a tour. Get around to a couple of festivals and cities. Things are still in the works, but keep an eye out, and I will be taking my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, and my show, Wage Against the Machine, to some places, to some festivals in the coming year or two. So yeah, well, nothing's locked in right now, but just keep an eye out, and we'll keep going. Until then, I am your host, Matt Harvey, and this is The Bearer of Weird News. Let's get into it. First, we've got the headlines. China is now offering rewards to citizens who make valuable national security tip-offs. Citizens can get spiritual rewards in the form of certificates or material rewards of cash from $2,075 to more than $20,765, depending on the value of the tip-off. When asked, older citizens were critiquing the system, saying they thought the standards of citizenship had lowered a bit. Back in their day, they'd have snitched for the state for free, for nothing but the honour and the right not to be shot. Now everybody needs a participation trophy simply to snitch for the state. What a state of affairs. China is, of course, now one step closer to eliminating Windows from all of its government endpoints and will be switching to Linux entirely amid conflicts with the US. And just to be completely sure that they aren't compatible with US computers, they'll actually be searching the internet using Ask Jeeves. If you're not sure what Ask Jeeves is, talk to a parent or some sort of older uncle. They'll be able to talk you through it. A new study was published which says unexpectedly reaching out for a friend is more appreciated than people assume. The study is set to be published in the esteemed journal, What Did I Do? Please Just Call Me Steve! It's a highly esteemed journal, guys. People really respect the work. The High Court has struck down the Home Affairs Minister's power to strip dual nationals of Australian citizenship for engaging in suspected terrorist activities. Don't get too excited. It really just means that we can't kick politicians out of the country for acts of eco-terrorism, both nationally and internationally. I'm sure they're thrilled about that. Nicola Grattery, the chief prosecutor for Catanzaro, a small Italian city with heavy mafia presence, told the Times that although homosexuality is still taboo among older bosses, the mafia has relaxed its rules to permit gay men in its lower ranks after discovering that the son of one of the prominent bosses is living as a drag queen under the name Lady Godiva. Now, I'm all for the progress and that this means the mafia are more accepting of drag queens than, say, the Proud Boys, which is a sentence only 2022 could have produced. But I am disappointed with the choice of drag name. There's a rich world of characters that you could have created, and you went with Lady Godiva? Come on, champ. What about Little Caesar? Maria Puzo? Vito Corleone? I'd also would have accepted Sonny or Fredo. and the seemingly obvious Pauline No Nuts, hey! Though, if he wanted to keep his mafia ties, you know, out of his drag life, then could also have taken testosterone or estrogen. Those names are just there, and I'm surprised nobody has grabbed them up yet. A Nashville hot dog eatery is offering a creative deal to support male birth control. Free milkshakes for customers who show proof of a vasectomy. A deal that he is calling the Snip for Shake. Given the flurry of men ready to take personal responsibility for their health during the COVID pandemic by wearing a mask and getting vaccinated without throwing a tantrum or undermining public safety, this deal will probably wipe out half of humanity. Owner Sean Big Daddy Porter remains confident that people will be responsible, saying, "It's a way to put the ball in the guy's court." Or rather, take the ball out of the guy's court. Come on, Big Daddy, come on. You're letting the team down. He went on to say he'd offer up 2 milkshakes if you underwent the full Ken doll treatment. So, guys, that's right out there for you. The UK's Intellectual Property Office has decided artificial intelligence systems cannot patent inventions. A 2-1 decision by the judges said to instead list a real person as the inventor, as only a person can have rights, a machine cannot. Which explains why Amazon are working so hard to maim all of their employees. If they replace enough parts with their machine parts, they can strip their employees of what few rights they do have. It's a system that works. Data finds Republicans are obsessed with searching for transgender porn. Despite the more than 300 anti-LGBTQ bills that they have proposed across 36 US states, so far, in 2022, daily Google search trend data from June 1st, 2022 to June 19th, 2022 showed that there's a correlation between conservatism and searching for transgender porn. You can read all about it in Predictable Hypocrite Magazine 2022's big list of Predictable Assholes, Internet Edition. This makes conservative porn searchers the reigning champion since the public got access to the internet. It's a simple formula. As all of the members of Predictable Hypocrite Magazine's big list are, so you just take the thing that they are yelling the loudest about and most nonsensibly about, and that'll be the big winner. Try it at a party and impress your journalism teacher. It'll be a good fun thing for you. Qantas has inked a new deal with the ABC to screen ABC news bulletins on Qantas flights and in airport lounges instead of Sky News. After all, people already feel like shit at the airport, and they don't need Sky News making it worse. While there have long been calls for Sky News to be removed from the lounges, just last year, Sky News was suspected by YouTube of airing COVID-19 misinformation, and recently, it was identified as a key content hub for climate science deniers. Qantas was just looking to save money on their Foxtel subscription, so Alan Joyce doesn't have to take a pay cut. The ABC doesn't even cost them any money, as they rarely pay any tax. So really, it's a win-win, guys. Well, for Alan Joyce. For the rest of us, we'll see. The parents of disgraced former New Zealand MP Aaron Gilmore say he should repay the $500,000 loan they allege he owes them before being able to run for Wellington City Council. Gilmore's parents should note personal debts aren't usually a hindrance to running for office and seem, in fact, to be a stronger motivator. However, Gilmore argued that he did not owe his parents anything as the loan, which is, quote, not close to $500,000, was to a trust set up for his children. So like most politicians, he is partaking in the age-old tradition of passing on financial responsibility to the next generation. It's just good to see that he knows how the game is played. Victoria Police have launched an Australian First service that allows people to instantly report sexual harassment and offensive behaviour on public transport by texting a number, because they know people would rather die than make a phone call. In addition to unwanted sexual behaviours, people on public transport will be able to report antisocial behaviour, such as verbal abuse, threatening behaviour, and vandalism. On the first day, there was mass reports of groups dressing as police officers and claiming to be running some sort of protection racket, but mostly just appeared to harass the poor students and confuse passengers who were peacefully riding the train mere moments ago. No word yet on whether these pretend police will see justice. We'll just have to wait and see. Airbnb has permanently banned parties and events at homes on its platform after a temporary measure during the pandemic proved popular with hosts. That story again. Airbnb about to lose large chunks of its revenue due to massive backflip on this new rule they introduced after people just host their parties in other locations instead. Five universities have collaborated on research for the largest, longest study on avocados, which found that eating one avocado a day for 6 months was found to have no effect on belly fat, liver fat, or waist circumference in people overweight or with obesity. According to a new study that was completely sponsored by the Haas Avocado Board. Coincidentally, they also did a study by six universities that showed two avocados a day will not only not make you fat, but will make you cooler, funnier, richer, and loved by both the working class and the 1%. Actually, that sounds pretty good. Where can I get an avocado? Can I get an avocado, please? Can we get one? No? We're in the middle of filming? After. We're gonna have one after. The UK government is considering a ban on wet wipes after an island made from wet wipes the size of two tennis courts has changed the course of the River Thames. Upon hearing about the matter, the Tory party challenged the pile of wet wipes for stepping on their territory, saying, "If there is an unlovable blob that will damage the face of London, it's us." It's important to know where you stand. Dominion Voting Systems, which provided voting machines to 28 states in the 2020 US election, was given the go-ahead to sue Fox Corp, the parent company of Fox News, in a $1.6 billion lawsuit as a result of their baseless accusations about voter fraud and stolen elections. Upon hearing that Rupert Murdoch might be in trouble, the coalition has rushed to propose a $1.6 billion support package for Australian-born billionaires who have been forced to work overseas as a show of good faith that they still believe in Australian production of news. Scott Morrison has revealed he received honorarium payments for recent speeches in Japan and Korea and plans to join the international lecture circuit through Global Speakers Agency. Talks will be on various topics that the former Prime Minister is considered an expert on, like holding five jobs and still making time for holidays, quiet quitting, how to have five jobs and still achieve nothing, soft democracy and the art of cooking curries, how to lose international friends and infuriate people, how to speak so people don't know what you're saying, and how good is coal? A guide to embracing 18th century technologies for modern living, and failing your way to the top, a slacker's guide to running a country. Moving on now onto bigger news. First up, as I've been away for so long and haven't been paying that much attention to affairs back home, I thought I'd do a little home check-in and see what's been happening in the whitest part in the southern hemisphere, and that includes the Antarctic. So what have the good people of Australia been up to in my absence? Let's have a little look-see, shall we? So with a brand new progressive government in charge, surely there can only be good news on the horizon. And look, here, straight into it, with almost 5 million Australians set to receive their largest welfare raise in three decades. Fantastic. Look at this. Only a few short months in, and Labor has delivered on their election promise of not being the coalition. Ha! Fantastic. Maybe the world's lowest bar to leap over by actually doing something for struggling Australians. The Labor Party proudly took to Twitter and other forms of social media to announce that welfare recipients will receive the largest pay increase in 30 years. in a surprise turn that may see Labor forming a competent government and actually deliver on a key platform on Labor's election campaign, lifting stagnant wage growth for Australians. Social Services Minister Amanda Rishworth released a statement reminding people that Labor's guiding principles as a government are ensuring no one is left behind. An important idea for Anthony Albanese, who, as we all know...
First, I would like to thank my mother, Marianne Albanese, who raised me under very difficult economic circumstances.
So, for them to be so proud, this must be a huge raise, right? Must be massive. How much can job seekers expect? Should we prepare for a holiday or start saving for a house? Yeah, maybe just a nice dinner out where I don't have to carefully curate a week's worth of groceries so that each meal stretches multiple meals and provides convenient leftovers like the ancient Native Americans. We don't let any part of the grocery shop go to waste. So let's have a look. How much are we getting? Seems job seekers will receive a record-breaking $25.70 a fortnight, which, doing the maths, just over here, just doing the maths a little bit, hold the one, minus my dignity, and seems that will save us an incredible $1.83 a day, smashing the cost of living crisis right in the inflation. I'm thrilled about it, really. I mean, I'm tired of jokes about the price of avocados. Sure, we got to have a little bit of reprieve with lettuce jokes for a minute there, but then it just went back down, and we're stuck with the same old stereotypes again. Oh, and they did kind of forget to mention that, it's a little thing, but it's probably just between us here in the podcast, because obviously we can't appear to be too biased. We've got to talk about both sides of an issue, so like just between us, they did kind of forget to mention that the rise, yeah, the pay rise that they were very proud of, is only due to indexation matching record high inflation. But like, that's why we have an opposition, to point out when our government has done something cynical that they would have done had they been in power, instead of say, oh. But that's why we have an opposition, to point out when our government has done something cynical that they absolutely would have done had they been in power instead, you know. But no, they get to stand there and say, hey, isn't that cynical? Look at this cynical thing you're doing. Feels good. Must be good to be the opposition. Easily worth the $211,000 a year that they are paid in these times of increasing austerity. Value for money. Opposition leader and business Dracula, Peter Dutton, rose from his dark bit of daylight slumber to remind Australians that a welfare rise of this proportion wouldn't be so historic, nor even possible, if the coalition hadn't bothered to take the time to stagnate welfare payments to record lows to begin with. After all, light has no meaning without darkness. A surprisingly poetic statement from the man of boundless compassion, Peter Dutton, who said of refugees in detention, "The reality is, these people had, at the generosity of the Australian taxpayer, received an enormous amount of support for a long period of time." Just a wealth of poetic compassion rolling out of the opposition leader. But, rolling out their typical party pooper attitude, the Anti-Poverty Centre writes welfare recipients will be no better off, noting that the government is falsely equating payment indexation to a payment increase, when the truth is that people on Centrelink are still in the same relative level of poverty, so all those people who hate the poor and wish them nothing but ill will can stay calm and relaxed in the knowledge that, despite the number going up, the value of the dollar poor people are receiving is just as bad as it has ever been. That's not to imply that the Labor government has abandoned the poor they spent so long trying to convince to vote for them. Certainly not. And frankly, I'm disappointed that you'd be so cynical as to imply it. O ye of little faith, listener. Why, they are doing more than ever for Australia's most struggling class, as they are going ahead with the construction of 27 new coal mines across Australia. So don't worry, Australians, we're slowly building towards our country-wide goal of completely eradicating winter and creating a summer superpower that is just run by mostly white people. Hey, but don't let this convince you that there will be no progressive action in Australia. No, 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 no. In fact, as Australia will be set to phase out conventional layer hen cages by 2036, meaning there would only be free-range eggs left on the shelves once the change is complete. You're welcome, Australia. It's just a shame that there won't be enough dry land left in the country to enforce the changes, as we will be drowned under the global impact of building 27 new coal mines by then. However, the good news for renters in South Australia, as the South Australian government is currently looking at modernising the state's residential tenancy laws, which could see tenants allowed to rent with pets. Hey, there's some good news. It's particularly nice as it means that we can die cold and hungry in our homes with good company. Maybe the shared warmth of having a pet will mean that we won't have to spend as much money on heating, as renters will be able to collect all of the shedded fur from their pets and stuff it into a doona cover to keep themselves warm over the long cold winter. In 2020, new laws came into effect in Victoria, which made it easier for renters to own a pet. I mean, it's still nearly impossible to get a house, but I hear you get more sympathy from people if you're homeless and have a pet, so that's always a bonus. In an attempt to improve its international reputation on refugees, Australia has lifted the permanent migration cap intake to almost 200,000 this financial year. So why the sudden national change of heart? Has the damage from Djokovic accidentally uncovering our dirty hidden secret refugee prison through his inability to follow doctor's orders been a wake-up call to a nation so psychologically damaged from its responsibilities to developing nations, not only as a contributor to resource wars under the guise of peacekeeping, but also as a major contributor to climate change through our commitment to exporting fossil fuels, driving us to a new moral perspective? Oh, no, that's not it. We just want to address that we are calling the nation's critical jobs and skills shortage without addressing the cost of education or lifting pay rates or jobs people would be willing to do if they were appropriately compensated. My mistake. We all make mistakes, guys. Now, one might think, given the desperation over the last few years to get foreign labour back into the country following the border closure due to COVID, that the Shadow Employment and Workforce Relations Minister and Minister for Over-Enthusiasm, Michaelia Cash...
Go and have a curry for the country! Hey! I'm going to tell the Prime Minister that one. A curry for the country, I love it. I love Indian food.
...would be keen to support the very same migrant workers they've desperately missed and change the rules to bring in some while the borders were closed, and would be willing to do whatever it takes to ensure that they're getting the best possible support, he asked knowingly. Oh, what's that? Oh, no, this doesn't support migrant workers being given union induction at the border and potentially union membership. Oh dear. Weird that the Coalition, a group of political parties who came together in some sort of unification to ensure they get proper representation in Parliament, despite their outdated dinosaur ideas, would consider a union as a bad thing. It's almost as if they've seen that they can be effective. I mean, it's too cynical, even for me, to suggest such a thing. The Coalition's one slogan philosophy turned dystopian lifestyle manual,
jobs and growth, I'm focused on jobs and growth,
has caused them to have more than a few poor decision choices regarding children and workplaces. It's good to have a passion project though, returning children to the workforce after a severe decline in sooty orphans happily singing a wistful tune as they clean a chimney or build a horseless carriage or mining some sort of coal somewhere seems like a weird hill to force children to die on, but hey, you do you, baby. Particularly after the backlash to former Prime Minister Scott Morrison's attempt to lower the age of forklift driving to 16. Though I suppose the suggestion by New South Wales government that the roughly 3,000 COVID fines issued to children aged 10 to 17 in New South Wales could be paid off by placing children in unpaid work programs or on extended payment plans doesn't really constitute bringing back child labour, as child labourers actually got paid. So there's a nice little workaround for you. Instead, we are showing our allegiance to our British roots by returning families to the old school stylings of indentured servitude as perfected by feudalism. And Australia never suggested children get jobs again. Oh, wait. Breaking my will to want to interact with others' news. What's that? The Australian Retail Association has floated the idea that children as young as 13 could be put to work to help fill labour shortages in Australia. Repetition. ARA Chief Paul Zara said, an ideal model would be one where we allow 13 to 15 year olds to work with sensible regulations in place around not working during school hours or at times that would impact a young person's education. Sensible. Logical. Of course. Claiming Australia was at a crisis point when it came to labour shortages, with more than 40,000 vacancies in the retail sector, falling short of radical staffing solutions like offering reasonable and reliable hours and paying a decent pay rate which will allow them to cover the cost of living. After all, rents are already skyrocketing to the point of not being able to accommodate workers. Imagine how high rents will skyrocket if people start earning a living wage. It's the basic economic theory of Fisher's quantity theory of landlords being cunts, which clearly states the more money the poor have, the more money your landlord will try to take from you. It's simple economic theory, people. Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles said common sense needed to be applied when it came to putting younger teens to work. Not the kind of common sense that indicates that paying people better wages will fill labour shortages, but you do need to take baby steps, then toddler steps, then prepubescent steps, then you'll be ready for early teenager steps, which you will take into the HR office of your local retail store so that you can sign up to your mandatory retail service to help your country in its time of need. To ease the transition into saving the economy with the labour of children, the bearer of weird news is presenting a possible solution. Never again let it be said that we do nothing but complain without presenting solutions. So, in Australia, the general rules around hours of work for employees under 15 are: you can't work on school days during school hours. During the school term, you can only work for a maximum of 3 hours a day and 12 hours a week. During school hours, you can work for a maximum of 6 hours a day and 30 hours a week. You can only work between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. You must get a 30-minute rest break after every 3 hours of work you do, and the rest break can be paid or unpaid. You must get a break of at least 12 hours between finishing one shift and starting the next. Okay, so those are the rules as it stands. There are some exceptions for those rules. So if you work for your family, then there are no restrictions on the number of hours that you can work. So, here is the solution. All businesses will be officially, legally recognised as families for the purposes of allowing children to work longer hours more often. Businesses have been using the emotional blackmail of being a family in order to make you feel so guilty you'll stay longer than required and do unpaid labour for decades now. So why fight it? Upon hiring an employee, they'll be legally adopted by the business until such time as they are legally abandoned or fired in the post-adoption parlance. The process of adoption will actually mean that the business will have certain legal requirements to ensure you are kept well, as they are now your legal guardian. Food, secure housing, a safe environment, which is much more than they're actually obliged to provide now. So you're welcome, Australia. There is a workable solution for you. Moving on now to Immaculate Cloneception News. Researchers have created the world's first synthetic embryos in a groundbreaking feat that bypassed the need for sperm, eggs, and fertilization, rendering the human race somewhat obsolete, which is probably for the best as far as the planet is concerned. Scientists at the Weizmann Institute in Israel found that stem cells from mice could be made to self-assemble into early embryo-like structures with an intestinal tract, the beginnings of a brain, and a beating heart. Conservatives rushed to the lab to ensure that the scientists kept the embryo alive and didn't abort it, but upon discovering that they weren't restricting a woman's bodily autonomy by doing so, they were conflicted. After all, is it even preserving the sanctity of life if you don't oppress someone else's choices? It's one of the great philosophical conundrums of our age. For now, they will have to hold off on such classic science fiction moral questions turned dystopian realities such as, is a clone legally a human? And if a clone forms in a lab and nobody comes to make it, does it make a soul? Classic science fiction. Which makes the next story particularly vexing for your hardcore carnivores, as a Dallas-based startup is trying to bring back the thylacine, formerly the world's largest carnivorous marsupial that went extinct in the 1930s, more commonly known as the Tasmanian tiger. And the most hardcore of carnivores among us refuse to acknowledge that meat grown in a lab is really meat. You see, they need to see the life drain out of the eyes of a creature. The company in question, Colossal Biosciences, is referring to themselves as a de-extinction company, placing them in a good position for the future of Australia, as we are on a collision course with burning all our wildlife to death. So we will need innovative solutions to modern problems that we can ignore for 90 years, you know, as we tend to do. So, you know, an improvement on the normal 98 years it took to acknowledge and apologise for stolen generations. Looks like we're improving as a nation. Pow, pow, pow! Progressive government. We will have an apology ready to go for the wildlife that we allowed to go extinct through inaction over climate change in maybe 80 years or so. And we can consider a motion to maybe take meaningful action in the 20 years following that, if we get around to it. No rush, but we will make a motion to consider maybe possibly getting around to it, given time. Now, given the nature of disruption capitalism, tech companies' propensities to fail to make money without making immoral action, and the almost pathological nature of American companies to pursue reckless financial success, it is only a matter of time that all animals cloned by Colossal Biosciences go from being gifted to the home country to being loaned to the home country on annual contracts where we either pay money or exchange valuable minerals, you know, like how we access pandas as part of a soft power exchange with China for uranium. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, we definitely do that. That is a thing that you can look up. And that way we can access the animals that once roamed freely across our lands for a small cost. like some sort of poorly written parable in a horrific science fiction novel, probably titled something awful like Democracy for Koalas or Do Tech Companies Dream of Artificial Tigers? You know, something nonsense like that. Last year, Colossal Biosciences announced that it was trying to resurrect the woolly mammoth. And given that we are now actually overrun with woolly mammoths, unable to escape the Flintstones-like existence where we have replaced all petrol-run cars with the bodies of cars strapped to the backs of woolly mammoths, I suspect that we are set to see the return of the Thylacine in mere months, right in time for SpaceX to get its first rocket to the moon. All of those things will definitely be happening at the same time. Warmongering news now! The Shadow Defence Minister and man who seemingly didn't read Donald Horne's The Lucky Country before invoking the phrase, The Lucky Country, Andrew Hastie, has called for Australia to develop and operate its own missiles, warning the era of the lucky country is over. See, I wasn't just making it up. Now, for non-Australian listeners, but also mostly for Australian listeners, as we don't actually know this, Donald Horne first coined the phrase the lucky country in 1964. He meant it as a term of reproach, you know, an expression of his disappointment in Australia. Horne argued that Australia was a lucky country run mainly by second-rate people who share its luck. Which we then took as our national identity. Going on to vote in second-rate people after second-rate people with a clear lack of innovation and ambition, accusing you, the people, as having an absence of interest in art. Which, given the numbers at certain festival shows that aren't the most popular comedians in Australia, he may have nailed it on the head right there when he said that we weren't interested in art. Hey, prove me wrong! Prove me wrong! Come to my shows. Here is a particularly scathing quote. Australia lives on other people's ideas, and although its ordinary people are adaptable, most of its leaders, in all fields, so lack curiosity about the events that surround them that they are often taken by surprise. Oh, harsh, Horne, harsh, but fair. Here is Horne himself about the quote. When I invented the phrase in 1964 to describe Australia, I said, Australia is a lucky country run by second-rate people who share its luck. I didn't mean that it had a lot of material resources. I had in mind the idea of Australia as a British-derived society whose propensity in the great age of manufacturing came from the luck of its historical origins. In the lucky style, we have never earned our democracy. We simply went along with some British habits. A tradition we continue in honour to this day by mostly playing British-made comedy on ABC iView rather than innovating and investing in our own. But I digress. I digress. Back to Hastie. Back to Hastie. Hastie argued Australia needs greater deterrence given the very bleak strategic outlook with a rising China displaying revisionist and expansionist ambitions. And if there's a country that knows the danger of unchecked expansionism, it's Australia. Well, it's Australia's indigenous population. And the ruling sect of Australia gets to exist in a state of nationalist doublethink where we know what we did and that it was bad, but we refuse to acknowledge it in any meaningful way. That's the Australian way. Hastie said Australia needs more fuel stocks, more ammunition, and ironically, given the coalition's reluctance to invest in high-speed internet, investment in cyber capability, nuclear submarines, and hold adversaries at a distance, and missiles that can reach out and touch an adversary. Taking a classic Mr. Tickle approach to interactions with other countries, keeping them at a distance while simultaneously stretching out your relentless twisting tendrils that you call arms and insisting on touching them, likely without consent, all for your own amusement. Classic Mr. Tickle. The plan for Australia to become a missile magnate and start to heavily invest in our defence budget is clearly the Coalition's Climate Action Plan. It's a manly man's approach to tackling climate change. None of this compassionate care for our great life-giving planet and future generations. Nope, 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 nope. Mankind is the biggest contributor to climate change, and if we build a bunch of missiles, then we can blow up a bunch of humanity, thus directly impacting climate change in a positive way. It is a simple plan, people. Australia will kill as many things as it takes to allow us to continue selling coal, or at least digging new coal mines. And while Australia contemplates its position in the Mad Max future, it is determined not only to create, but charge entry to its new fun tourist trap, the disastrous dwelling of Mad Max. I hear good things, you know, I hear, like, the plans, like, you know, you're a bit unsure when people are going to build a major theme park on a movie property like that, but I've heard that there's, like, fun race attractions and, you know, there's a lot of desert running spaces, some cool costumes, you know, just putting it out there. But Australia could be a different, more modern kind of desert landscape as it transitions towards a new future. A future in responsible climate change action and creating a monopoly on a power source. Or, as Murray Shearer, Chair and Professor of Hydrogen and Alternative Energy at CQ University in Gladstone has said, we can be the equivalent of Saudi Arabia in clean energy. Now, Australia does have a tendency to fall in line and follow the examples of other countries, as we have just discussed. So, transitioning from an international mining magnate to an international sun baron, hey, we love a sun baron country, a land of browning plants, of ragged mountain ranges and increasing flooding rains. Poetry. Saudi Arabia is a strong model for Australia's future, as we love a monarchy in Australia, and we are keen to be under the reign of some sort of monarch. And Saudi Arabia has an absolute monarchy in which all legislative, executive, and judiciary power ultimately rests in the hands of the king, who is both head of state and head of government. And after recent revelations that Scott Morrison had secretly appointed himself to 5 simultaneous ministries while working as PM, well, turning increasing amounts of power to one member of parliament, that starts us down nicely on the road to becoming a nation of singularly focused absolute power. Australia's love affair with coal and fossil fuels, both at home and for exports, has made it the largest carbon emitter per capita in the developed world. So clearly, we already stand as the Saudi Arabia of coal production. So the shift to solar would keep us in good standing, as we could generate 5,000 exajoules of green energy, more than 8 times the current global demand. And as we accrue our new power, there would be none who could stop us. We'd expand our semi-Saudi traits into full-blown culture change, causing Pauline Hanson to have an existential crisis, because although she is fully in support of the actions of conservative white people, we are coming closer to the lifestyle of conservative brown people, her mortal enemies. Expansion for our new cultural identity could start with something that we are comfortable and familiar with, the torture and undignified treatment of whichever people we are othering this week. See, Saudi Arabia's criminal procedure code prohibits torture and undignified treatment. But, much like an Australian soldier at war, the practice of torture and using torture to extract forced confessions of guilt would remain common, even expanding. A logical expansion from there would be our handling of migrants and refugees. The Saudis hold tens of thousands of African migrants in hellish conditions in detention centres. And we love a detention centre here in Australia so much that Amnesty International and other international bodies have condemned us both for mistreatment of minority groups and primarily refugees, though Indigenous people, and for a long time publicly and now mostly quietly on the fringes, LGBTQIA plus groups. See, we're doing it, Australia, we're doing it. These will be corrected accordingly as we consolidate the power of the sun and become more powerful. Now, we still have a ways to go in terms of matching Saudi Arabia in its treatment of journalists, as we haven't yet straight murdered one. But we are slowly murdering the art of objective journalism, and the unchecked consolidation of power by the Murdoch Empire means that we have begun the process of converting journalism into sort of a state propaganda. And to cover it all, we will undergo the much beloved tradition of sport washing, which won't seem out of place because, as a nation, we have always loved sport. We are like a golden retriever. Loyal, trustworthy, and happy to chase a ball if someone has one to throw. If somebody got a ball, we're going to chase the ball. Somebody's got a ball. Don't scare me like that. Don't promise a ball and not deliver. Making the transition into a fully sports-washed nation of sun barons, handling the world's source of power complete. Much like now, people mostly tolerate us at world events. We swan about doing what we like and making speeches to empty rooms full of pomp and ceremony, and come back home for a pat on the head asking others if they saw the sport that we did, and aren't we good at it? Aren't we a good boy? Aren't we a good country? Yes, we are. Yeah, we're a good sports country. Yes, we are. And finally, monarchy news. You all knew this was coming, and if the monarchy is your bag, then call it an episode and get on out of here. Don't forget to come. Keep an eye out for me at the festivals. I'm looking to bring some shows around soon, and hopefully next year will be a big one for touring. So if you don't want to hear about the monarchy, you can go. But those with stronger constitutions, welcome to the rest of the show. Now, while technically this is not Australia, the monarchs are our head of state, and given the news has been flooded with almost constant coverage of the funeral and mourning period of the Queen, we will also have a break in regular transmission to cover the Queen's death. Queen Elizabeth II, the world's longest reigning monarch, the world's former longest reigning monarch, corgi enthusiast, and one of a long line of cultural Highlanders. You know, they walk into a place, they see a culture, and declare, "There can be only one!" has died after 70 years in the same job. A shining example to millennials why it's impossible to move up the jobs ladder, as the cost of living crisis has forced older generations to hold on to those coveted full-time jobs. Immediately after the death was announced, the BBC started round-the-clock coverage of everything even remotely related to the former monarch turned lead-plated fertiliser. Did you speak to someone who saw the Queen once? We want to hear from you. Anecdotes, anecdotes, anecdotes. All news must go! We've got body language experts, royal experts, corgi experts, all our experts are standing by and waiting to give you commentary. Are they questionable? You betcha! What about landmarks? You want people standing in front of landmarks? We got them! It's a landmarks bonanza! However, despite being fans of the royals, fans of the crown are furious that the BBC's 24-hour coverage has spoiled the big surprise ending of season 6 of the Netflix production. As Netflix rarely makes anything go for more than 6 seasons, it was gonna have to be the big ending. With the Queen dead, it is time for reflections from colonies, former and current. As we think about our place in the world, our relationship with the monarchy, and the troubled history it brought across the ocean, along with bread thieves and other undesirables. Australians now need to wrestle with their country's stance in the Commonwealth and who they'd like to see as their head of state. With the death of Queen Liz, Australia is now halfway to making a proper run for freedom. We just need to wait for Rupert Murdoch to die so that we can fully take back control of the country. The UK has entered an official mourning period, with many businesses taking time off so citizens can mourn the loss of wages and struggle to pay their rent and bills more than they usually do. It's the way to make even more staunchly anti-monarchists upset for a few days. Australian Parliament has shut down for 15 days and Anthony Albanese made his way over to London to partake in the mourning ceremonies, give his condolences and check to make sure that the Queen is actually dead before we change all the money. Upon receiving confirmation the Queen is in fact dead, workers in Australia prepared to take 15 days off to mourn that Charles is now officially king. As is tradition, new Australian coins and a new $5 note will need to be minted to represent the change in monarch. The new coins will differ from the previous coins, where monarchs' faces will alternate from facing to left to right, with the changing monarch. Instead, the new coins will depict different acts that the monarchs have covered up in their years of power. Atrocity samples currently being floated are Edward VIII and Wallace Simpson hanging out with Adolf Hitler of mass murder fame, Queen Elizabeth II's offshore million-dollar tax haven in the Cayman Islands, that and the fact that her and Philip were cousins, the mass grave of corgis in the backyard of Balmoral that she was preparing to raise from the grave upon turning 100 to rule as Dark Queen of the Night for eternity, the specific experiments done on Prince Andrew to stop him from sweating, collecting foreign jewels to grow your ability to focus and enhance the necromantic arts, King James VI setting up the Royal African Company, and Prince Rupert being founding shareholders, those are companies that eventually would sell a lot of slaves, secretly vetting over 1,000 pieces of legislation before they came to Parliament, and even vetoing a few of them because they didn't benefit you, running a royal family breeding farm, and everyone's favourite cover-up, murdering Princess Diana. Australians will also anxiously await to see if the new $5 note will actually be able to be folded into anything rude, like the previous $5 note. And as a final act of respect to the Queen, Victorian Premier Dan Andrews has vowed to change the Indigenous name of the Maroondah Hospital to honour the late Queen Elizabeth II should Labour return to office in November state election. Despite the backlash to the decision, Dan Andrews has doubled down on his decision, not only standing firm on the change, but also vowing to change the Victorian acknowledgement of country to acknowledge what he is calling the real traditional owner, Queen Elizabeth II. Okay, guys, that is the end of the episode. If you made it all the way to the end, thank you so much for sticking around, for listening, and for hopefully having a good time. I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it, please do share it on social media. Tell a friend who you think might enjoy it. Get it around there. We're trying to build a little bit of an audience. We're trying to build the podcast here. If you could give us a nice review on Apple or wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, 5 stars, 1 star, or nothing. What is the point otherwise? All or none. And if you have enjoyed the show, please do come out and check the live shows that I'll be doing. I will be touring. Like I said, not much is locked in yet, but we're looking at a bunch of places like Leicester, Newcastle, Canberra, Comedy Festival in Melbourne, maybe Perth Comedy Festival if we can get in, Sydney Comedy Festival if we're lucky. We'll be going back to Edinburgh, Darwin if we can swing Darwin, and just all sorts of places. It's going to be a big year. Touring, and so hopefully we'll be able to see you at a couple of festivals. And look after yourselves, guys. Looks like the mask mandates are lifting, but if you haven't got your boosters, get your boosters, and be safe and have fun. Bye.